This is The Guardian.
I'm Jane Lee, coming to you from Wurundjeri land. And this is the full story newsroom edition, where Guardian Australia's editors discuss the news of the week. This week, a small detail in the upcoming US budget has sparked fresh speculation over whether the US can deliver on its promise to sell Australia three nuclear-powered submarines. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has weighed in.
We're now in a situation where we have lost all sovereignty, all agency. We are just bobbing along, you know, as a cork in the maelstrom of American politics.
But Pentagon and Democrat representatives have played down concerns, saying it's early days for the plan, which still has yet to get through the US Congress. So where does the truth lie? Today, I'm speaking with Head of Newsroom Mike Tischer and National News Editor Patrick Keneally about the future of Australia's alliance with the US. It's Friday, the 15th of March.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes.
And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
And good morning, Patrick.
Morning.
So, Mike, this week, former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has said that Australia's been, quote, mugged by reality over the AUKUS submarine deal. What did he mean by this?
So the reality he was referring to was that the US announced that it would halve the number of submarines it planned to build next year, which Australia is obviously tied into the AUKUS deal, the first pillar of which, as they call it, relates to a long and complicated submarine deal involving two different classes of submarines that we are buying from the US, some of them new, some of them secondhand, involving transfers of very large amounts of money to support the US in its submarine building capacity from Australia. A lot of people have questioned the deal, whether it's value for money, whether it's doing the right thing for our defence capability, and whether it's a huge risk in both technical and political terms. And what Turnbull meant by being mugged by reality, has been one of the critics. He was one of the architects of the previous deal with the French, which we abandoned to go with AUKUS under the Morrison government. So what he meant was already what was set out in the original AUKUS plan seems to be coming apart in the face of the complexities and the realities of US politics.
And Patrick, at the time that we're recording, it's exactly 1 year since the $368 billion AUKUS pact was unveiled with much fanfare in the US.
With the support and approval of Congress, beginning in the early 2030s, the United States will sell three Virginia-class submarines to Australia, with the potential to sell up to two more if needed.
Can you quickly remind us how significant this pact is and what else it involves beyond these submarines?
So it's a significant multi-billion dollar agreement between the US, the UK and Australia. It encompasses not only the submarine deal, but things like advanced artificial intelligence, more cooperation on things like countering online cyber attacks as well. That's a significant part of it, and advanced research in some areas of defence. But obviously, the really controversial bit is this submarine plan, which there is a lot of discussion and debate about whether it's actually feasible, whether it's going to happen. The US industrial base for producing submarines, as Mike alluded to, is significantly falling behind the mark of where it's supposed to be at this point. And they want to, you know, satisfy their own demands for Virginia-class submarines as well. So I think there's broad support. The Lowy Institute has done some polling on AUKUS a while ago, and, you know, it's broadly popular with the Australian people, around 50% support. So there's general wide levels of support for AUKUS, but the submarine part is definitely the most controversial.
So, yeah, the broad point that Turnbull and other critics are making is that the deal with the US and the UK, but the US is a significant part of this, really, locks us into their priorities. Mm. And Australia is unlikely to be top of the list. If the US decides that their defence money needs to be spent elsewhere, regardless of what they have agreed in principle with Australia, you know, we're not necessarily going to be their priority. But we're entirely in their hands now with having these submarines from the US. Whereas with a previous deal, that buying submarines from the French, conventionally powered submarines, it's just a straight out transaction. We buy the submarines, they build them, hopefully, for something in the region of what the build price was, although probably not. And then they deliver them and we use them. That's a much more simple transaction. This is much more complicated in every way. The way the technology is hugely more complicated, it's hugely more expensive, and we're entirely reliant on the US to deliver it.
Just going back as well, you know, we've got experience with submarine projects previously under the Collins class submarines, which were developed in the late 80s, early 90s, and went in production right into the early 2000s. And that was a Swedish design, which Australia adopted. They were built here. One of the key reasons that they wanted to do that was to maintain our sovereignty with those boats, that we could operate them independently, manage them independently. And that was a big aspect of it. And the French deal, you know, they were supposed to be produced both with work being done in French shipyards and in Adelaide as well. Under the AUKUS deal, you know, we'll get those three or, you know, potentially more submarines.
Potentially less.
Oh, potentially less in the 2030s. But then there's this idea that in the 2040s, we'll start producing our own submarines here, or at least some of the work, and that'll be a new class of boat in conjunction with the US and the UK, which, you know, isn't even on the drawing board yet. But all these timeframes seem very arbitrary at this point. We know that, you know, every submarine project right back to the Collins class has had huge problems, cost overruns and delays and teething problems. So there are just so many things that can go wrong. And I think that's why people like Turnbull are saying we need a dose of reality here.
And it's not just Turnbull, is it? I mean, there's a lot of question marks over this. And I guess former Prime Minister Paul Keating has also been very critical. Both Keating and Turnbull's argument, I suppose, is that not only are there all these question marks that we've just raised, there's also a lot of risk in relying so heavily on a country like the US that's growing increasingly politically volatile. What do we make of that now in light of this latest news?
So Keating's criticism obviously goes to, he has been a fierce critic of AUKUS, but that sort of stems from his broader critique of being tied so tightly to the US alliance, the traditional alliance, the defence alliance that Australia has pursued since the Second World War and before.
Buying these subs was like Anthony Albanese screwing up the shackle to make sure all the chains are connected. He screwed into place the last shackle in the long chain which the Americans have laid out to contain China. We are now part of a containment policy against China.
He sees the US alliance as positioning Australia fundamentally, you know, outside the Asian mainstream. He wants us to become more of an Asian-oriented country. And that has in turn been criticised by others as problems with engaging too closely, particularly with China, and leaving aside some of the human rights implications and other questions about cybersecurity implications of getting too close to China. So his view of AUKUS goes to that tight relationship with the US, and that traditionally has not been controversial in Australia because both major parties have pursued the same policy, essentially, that the US is our key defence partner. And even when there have been stresses over that, such as with joining the invasion of Iraq under the Howard government, for example, and that has not disrupted that bipartisan policy. But the current political situation in the US does cast it in a much more debatable light, I think, and has led people to question it. You know, should Australia be generally orienting it more towards its region? Or they're also overshadowed by this much bigger question of whether the US is a reliable long-term partner, given the volatility that you referred to of its politics.
Mm. I mean, the elephant in the room, of course, is the possibility of Donald Trump winning the next US election later this year. Patrick, how do you think that could affect AUKUS?
It's really unclear at this point. I think that the government in Australia and certainly congressional Republicans have been keen to point out that the AUKUS bill had bipartisan support when it passed through Congress. Mm. The government says that it's a long-standing agreement between the two nations and it doesn't matter who's in power. But you'd have to question, particularly with the way that Trump has been talking about NATO. So he said along the lines of if NATO members were not paying the 2% of GDP on defence, which NATO members are required to do, that he wouldn't come to their defence if Russia invaded.
So I said, you didn't pay, you're delinquent. No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay. You got to pay your bills.
Which is just a shocking thing to say when the whole idea of NATO is about collective security. If he's treating core US allies in that way, you would have to wonder what it means for AUKUS and ANZUS alliances as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with Trump, as we saw to quite a large extent in his administration when he was in power before, was his unpredictability. Like, he does have instincts which are kind of America first, you know, inward-looking instincts on economic issues and on political issues more generally, but he has no ideological bent. He's driven by self-interest, essentially. And in his international politics, it's really quite unpredictable. And there's nothing worse for a country like Australia than an unpredictable major power with which we're allied. And that's Australia's conundrum. We're talking about this hugely long-term submarine deal specifically that goes into the 2040s when we even start building the second class of submarines in Adelaide, and that relies on numerous changes of administration both in Australia, also in the UK and in the US, and that's what's animating a lot of the criticism of it, that it relies on continuity and stability, and that is the last thing that a Trump administration brings.
Mm. Well, I mean, the news this week casts quite a bit of doubt on the future of success of the AUKUS pact. But what other options are realistically available to Australia now on this front if it doesn't go ahead?
All of them are pretty grim. So at the moment, we're already going to have to look at some sort of life extension program for the Collins class. They'll be in service, you know, maybe even into the 2030s. The earliest of that was built in 1990 or thereabouts. That's like, can you imagine being underwater in a Ford Falcon from, you know, 1990? You know, we had one when I was a kid. You know, hopefully the Collins class has been better maintained than our family car was. But I think the idea that we can keep on running those forever is just not feasible. You know, at the moment, none of our allies, the UK or the US, have what would be termed off-the-shelf designs that we can just purchase. So we don't have a lot of options. We can't go back to the French deal. Even if we did, you know, that has a 10-year lead time. All of these things are a problem because nothing was done for many years. The decision was put off and off. Even when Turnbull signed the French deal, we were running well behind schedule for a replacement for the Collins-class submarine. So look, you know, we've pretty much gone into the casino and put it all on black. There's not a lot of the other options that we can do at the moment. Look, some people have suggested with the money that we're spending on the AUKUS program, you could buy, for example, an entire fleet of diesel electric submarines. But, you know, that again, we'd still have the problem that any submarine is at least a decade or more away.
We already paid $830 million to get out of the French deal. Imagine if we'd go back to them and say, look, you know, about that deal, could we do something favourable on our terms to this deal?
I guess the other option
absolutely
that,
screwed you.
I guess the other option that some people would point out is that do we need submarines at all? There is a question over whether they're the right fit for what we need in terms of national defence. Other people have pointed to long-range missiles, and we've seen drones playing an increasingly important part in defence and conflict. So there's a lot of people saying that there's technology on the horizon that will make submarines, you know, potentially obsolete by the 2050s. So this question's over where should we really be directing our funding?
You know, at the heart of this debate over the future of AUKUS is the goal, which is to deter the threat of a potential conflict with China and to protect Australia's trade routes. In light of all of these question marks over the future of the deal, could that affect the way Australia positions itself in Asia as a middle power, as the Albanese government puts it?
Well, we saw some polling on this in Guardian's Essential poll this week, which came up with, I think it's fair to say, there is not a one fixed position on this, but people were asked whether we should be primarily an ally of the US, an independent middle power with influence in the Asia Pacific, or Australia should do its best to not engage in world affairs, or were you unsure? Lots of people were unsure, 17% of the total. 20% said we should be primarily a US ally. 38%, the largest number, said we should be an independent middle power with influence. 25% said we should do our best not to engage in world affairs. Interestingly, on the sort of side issue, 32% of Greens voters said we should do our best not to engage in world affairs, which struck me as curious. But more broadly, 38% went for that independent middle power option, which kind of feels like the compromise position when you're asked that in a poll, but it is much more difficult to define when you're in power. Like, you have to make kind of binary decisions sometimes, like on a submarine deal, which very firmly may lodge you in one camp or the other. And so that is a popular option, but it's much harder to achieve in an actual policy terms when you're the government, I think.
I do think it's a, you know, maybe a slightly a false binary between the two. Can we not be a member of AUKUS plus an independent middle power in Asia? I don't know.
There was a lot of opposition in the region, well, a lot of criticism in the region when Australia signed up to AUKUS. It's clearly from China. I mean, that was to be expected. But I think some of the other Southeast Asian countries were unsure what that meant for Australia's future positioning in the region too.
But I think, you know, we recently hosted the ASEAN leaders for the ASEAN Plus Australia Summit in Melbourne, and it wasn't really a big issue. There were no major objections to it. In fact, the Singaporean Prime Minister said, once your boats are up and running, you're welcome to come and stop in at port in Changi.
Maybe he wondered if they ever would be up and running.
Yeah. Look, I don't know how big an issue it is. And you know, maybe there is a path that Australia can take which embraces both the kind of Anglosphere of the AUKUS deal and further engagement with our region and with Asia.
I think the question is more about what we talked about before about the volatility of the US. The view of the US has changed globally rather than the view of Australia. And it's just our position has remained the same, that the US is our essential ally. And people are looking at the US in a quite different way than they used to. And that reflects on us if we're perceived to be a rock solid and tie ourselves even more tightly into the US foreign policy and defence policy.
Next, surface surgery, and could the Titanic sail again?
Hi, I'm Patrick Keneally, National News Editor at Guardian Australia. Guardian Australia's Morning Mail is a quick roundup of the day's top stories, delivered directly to your inbox, bringing you reliable, accurate news from journalists you can trust. And it's free. Sign up at theguardian.com/newsletter or simply search for Guardian Australia newsletters.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, now it's time for what we can't get out of our heads. Mike, what was it for you this week?
My story was a story about surfing, which is not something I normally pay a lot of attention to, but it was about the Australian surfer Tyler Wright. We reported that Tyler Wright had had a quotes, life-changing procedure to help her breathe more easily. Amazing. But it involved having seven screws inserted into her head, some of which were as long as 17 millimetres. And there's this quote in the story where she says, "In the off-season, I expanded it. Essentially, it popped the bone. And I got 7 millimetres of extra airway space through that, and been life-changing."
Wow. Yeah, it sounds really risky as well, and dangerous potentially. Patrick, what was it for you this week?
For me, it's Clive Palmer's Titanic 2, which is something he can't get out of his head. You know, 10 years ago, he went to a very fancy hotel in London and announced that he was going to start building this. He's come out this week again to announce he really is building it, and he said he's going to build a vessel which is going to be far, far superior than the original. You'd kind of hope so, considering what happened to the original. He's outlined some designs and drawings of it, but, you know, maybe in 10 years' time we'll see him get up and announce it again. Who knows?
Yeah. I wonder if we'll see Clive Palmer's Titanic before the Orca Steel.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Thanks so much for your time today, Mike.
Thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thanks.
That was Head of Newsroom Mike Tisher and National News Editor Patrick Keneally. Before we go, I've been working on a special full story series called Who Screwed Millennials, which will be out really soon. We're launching a special preview tomorrow in your full story feed, but first, here's an exclusive sneak peek.
When our parents were our age, their lives looked a lot different than ours. You know, my parents owned a home and had two kids and a golden retriever by the time that they were 40. And my life just looked nothing like that.
Young Australians are the first generation to be worse off than our parents.
Home ownership is a distant dream.
We're the most educated generation, but drowning in debt.
Meanwhile, it's becoming harder and harder to find secure work.
And more often than not, we're told it's our fault.
But is it?
Who screwed millennials?
Not one person. Not one place, not one bogeyman.
We're seeing a real shift in how we talk about economic instability and whose fault it is.
I'm Jane Lee.
And I'm Matilda Bosley. Find out who screwed millennials by subscribing to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts.
The series will be in your feeds from March 25th. Okay, that's it for today. This episode was produced by Camilla Hannan and Daniel Simo. The executive producer was Miles Martignoni. I'm Jane Lee, and I'll catch you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.